This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. You're listening to episode 161 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, happy Labor Day weekend here in the States.
That's right. Coming up soon, we're going to get this episode out just before you and I start the holiday weekend.
The holiday weekend, you know, pretty soon it's going to be fall and I don't know where this year went. And by the way, I didn't realize it, but I got a LinkedIn post the other. We've been doing this now for 3 years. Do you believe that?
It doesn't feel like it. It definitely does not feel like it. Time has gone by pretty quickly. So have a lot of news stories and developments in this sort of burgeoning, growing, brand new industry. We've seen it kind of step up lately, I think. And I don't know. I think the future is looking pretty good, although we've got to get through some things like non-line of sight kind of flying and a few other things. But I think they'll come.
So we got a dense show tonight. We've got a couple of FAA waivers that are fairly significant. Blasting a drone to smithereens. The Pope, Zuckerberg, and a drone walk into the Vatican. Drones doing good for drought prevention. Robotic pilots, and of course, a video of the week and some listener feedback. So I guess we got a dense show. Let's get started. Well, our first story is from Deadline.com. CNN wins FAA waiver to fly news gathering drones over people. Well, why is this important? Because you're not supposed to fly drones over people.
That's right. Part 107 has a prohibition against that. But as we all know by now, most provisions or rules under Part 107 can be waived under certain circumstances. And CNN has received this waiver to fly over people. Previously, CNN has operated drones for news gathering, but that's only been over unpopulated areas. What they're flying is kind of interesting. This small Photokite Pro quadcopter. It's a tethered quadcopter.
Made for professional use cases in live broadcasting, it provides an uncompromised, low latency, full high definition video. Earlier, we had AIR. CNN announced AIR, which is Aerial Imagery and Reporting, their unit. But this quadcopter is interesting. It's about the size of your hand. It's not very big, is it?
No, it's quite small. You know, I guess I expected, David, something larger. I guess I envisioned CNN using something with a much larger, more pro type of camera underneath, requiring a large multi-rotor, but that's not what they're doing. And I think in part it's because this thing is tethered, and that's a great way to stay over a developing news story where you don't know maybe how long you need to be providing video coverage from the air. So the tether is great because it provides power to the drone. It also sends that video signal back down. So it's kind of a nice solution for news gathering, I think.
Yeah, 1.3-pound takeoff weight, and that includes a GoPro Hero 4, and it's high def. I mean, it's everything you need in a small, portable quadcopter. I mean, Yep. If you want to rapidly set up a drone video thing, this is not a bad idea. Like you said, when we talked about this earlier, I had visions of very large hexcopters carrying really large cameras, and this is sort of throw it up in the air and let it get its video quickly, which is makes sense now that you think about it, but not what I was originally expecting.
It does make sense. It makes a lot of sense. It's going to be fun to be watching CNN now and trying to, you know, watch for the stories that include footage covered by drone. I think those of us who are, you know, kind of following this along or participating in it, maybe it'll be obvious to us, but it'll be fun to see how much of the coverage is accomplished using drones in news gathering.
You're going to make me watch CNN on a regular basis now? Really? Yeah. Do I have to?
Oh, dear.
Well, where there's one waiver, there's another, huh, Max?
Yes, and we have an item from TechCrunch that says that, or this is titled, in a first, FAA allows Precision Hawk to fly drones where pilots can't see them.
And, of course, we're Precision Hawk is got a, it's a fixed wing that they're going to be using, and they got an exemption for BVLOS. And this was sort of encased surrounding a bunch of waivers for night flying. But Thomas Hahn, Precision Hawk executive, said, quote, in agriculture, now that we have an exemption to fly beyond the visual line of sight, we can fly an entire farm, not just one field efficiently, which is right. Really where we've been wanting to go is you want to be able to survey all of your property and not just one small field at a time. So that's the big advantage.
Here in the Northeast, in Connecticut in particular, the farms are, well, not very large by standards of agriculture in the middle of the country, perhaps on the West Coast as well. But these huge, large mega farms, there's no way you can provide coverage if you have to stay within the visual line of sight. They're just too large. And so I think that's been a real hampering factor in terms of using these drones for agricultural purposes. So Precision Hawk, of course, is one of the leaders in the ag industry in terms of using drones. And so having this kind of an exemption is really kind of critical, I think, for them and for the agriculture business. But it's been interesting to see that on the day that the Part 107 became effective, August 29th, there were waivers that were, you know, already, I guess, had been in process and were announced. And so this Precision Hawk waiver is one of a number of them.
And the dovetail about off of this was, and it's a slight promotion to join our Slack team, was the conversation we had over whether you should be using a multi-rotor over your agriculture or a fixed wing. And that was an interesting discussion that was being bantied about on our Slack team about, you know, whether a quadcopter, and I think you brought this up, Max, whether a quadcopter is really the most effective tool if you're doing large areas of property, and maybe a fixed wing is a better answer.
Yeah, because you've got much greater flight duration than with a multi-rotor. So I think in many applications where you're trying to cover a lot of geography over a period of time, a fixed wing might make more sense. But it's great to see this kind of progress, I think.
So let's talk about regress since you brought up progress.
yeah.
In June, Jennifer Youngman was home cleaning her shotguns and decided that a drone entered her airspace and blew it to smithereens. And this was from popularmechanics.com. Miss Youngman is a neighbor of actor-director Robert Duvall. And when the drone flew over her properly, she discharged her newly cleaned shotgun.
I think it's likely that the guys flying this drone were probably interested in Robert Duvall. And she sat there, I guess, on her porch cleaning her shotguns, keeping an eye on this. There's a quote in this article from Popular Mechanics that I like. She says, "I loaded my shotgun and took the safety off, and this thing came flying over my trees. I don't know if they lost command or if they didn't have good command, but the wind had picked up. It came over my airspace, 25 or 30 feet above my trees, and hovered for a second. I blasted it to smithereens." I guess now we've had a couple of cases in the news reported of people shooting down drones. I think there have been, about two, maybe three other cases where this has happened. Of course, the FAA considers a drone to be an aircraft, and shooting down aircraft is
a federal offense.
To my knowledge, no one has ever, suffered the consequences of that yet, but I think some of these cases are still underway. No news yet about Ms. Youngman's fate in this case, but I guess the fate of the little drone is pretty certain, and that won't be flying again.
Let's go to the opposite end of the spectrum and talk about peace, love, Catholicism, and Facebook. How's that for a combination?
Yeah, okay. So how do all these things tie together, David?
This is from TechCrunch.com. Mark Zuckerberg, who is the founder and creator of Facebook, meets Pope Francis and gives him a drone. Let's dovetail a little bit further on this. Was Zuckerberg presented the Pope a gift, which is traditional when you meet the Pope. And he presented a model of his current drone, the Aquila. So it wasn't really a fully functional drone. He gave a model of the drone, but that doesn't really make a good headline.
No.
So what's the Aquila, Max?
So the Aquila, we've talked about this before. This is one of those giant, long persistence kind of drones that are intended to orbit about and provide internet connectivity in regions that are not connected. The Aquila is large. The wingspan is over 113 feet. It just completed its first official full-scale flight test this summer. In fact, we're going to talk about that or mention that a little bit later with some videos. The idea is it stays up there for about 90 days and provide internet access to a really wide area. So we know why Zuckerberg is interested in that. Why would the Pope be interested in that? Well, Zuckerberg was in Italy to do a couple of things, but this is also in the aftermath or in the wake of that earthquake that killed a lot of people in Italy. And Zuckerberg spoke to the Pope about connecting people, communications, how the Pope's message can be spread to more people. That kind of brings in the internet angle. But it was kind of interesting when you read this article, David. It almost seems like Zuckerberg has been acting in the role of a politician, almost something you would see from a government representative, maybe. So I think that's very interesting. But the Pope now has a little model of a very large drone that I think we're going to be talking about a lot more in the future.
Yep. Well, persistent drones or persistent satellites, definitely something we keep returning to. The next story is just because I got so pissed off at the headline.
What is this story, David?
The story was Salon.com basically had a headline that talking about UTM, which is the unmanned traffic management system that NASA's building. But their headline was, "Feds turn to space experts, NASA, for small drone traffic plan." Now, we've talked about UTM, and I won't go that far, but Salon.com needs to realize that there's a first A in NASA, and that stands for aeronautics, and it's the aeronautics team, not the space team, that are helping build the UTM. So I hate it when people just think NASA is just about spaceships and rockets when they do so much for aviation. So we're going to leave it at that. So we'll put a link to the show notes, but Salon.com, I basically tweeted, I'm like, do you know what the second A stands for in NASA, or do you think it's a word? So we'll go there. Let's talk more about positive stuff. This was bigstory.ap.org. In drought, drones help California farmers save every drop.
That's right. The California drought. This is serious business, especially for farmers who are trying to grow food to feed us all.
And AUVSI, which is the Association for Unmanned Vehicle Systems International, says about 2,100 companies and individuals have FAA permission to fly drones for farming. But what they're saying is they're using a lot of these drones for is water management. They want to keep the crops healthy. And one farmer with a 2,400-acre tomato crop, and this goes back to what we were talking about earlier, large farms, not just our farms that we have here on the East Coast.
That's a lot of tomatoes, 2,400 acres of tomatoes. Wow.
You know, estimates his drones that detect irrigation leaks could save water enough for 550 families of four for a year. So these are irrigated crops because everything is in California, at least Southern California, is from the Colorado River. But if you've got an irrigation where it's got a giant leak, you're not watering your plants, you're just watering the ground. So using the drone to survey that, you can detect the leaks and fix them quickly.
And he's doing other things too. The article mentions that he's started using a thermal camera to show moisture variations in the soil. Of course, that's important because as you're developing your irrigation strategy, you obviously want to irrigate only the portions of the land that need the moisture. And if there are other areas that don't, you don't want to waste the water. So a great example of the kinds of things we can do in agriculture with this technology that's developing.
So really good. But let's talk about something completely different. Or is it completely different? We've got a lot of pilot friends now over the last couple of days since 107 came live on Monday. We're recording this on Thursday night. Who suddenly have pictures on their Facebook pages of unmanned certificates, even though a couple years ago all of these people were complaining that drones were going to fly into their airplanes. We've got existing aircraft, which we know, like Sikorsky has taken their UH-60s, as well as some other aircraft, and have made them optionally manned, which means they could fly as a drone from a ground control station or via a pilot in the aircraft. Well, how about if we put the drone pilot into the aircraft or a robot?
Yeah, this comes out of a group working in Korea. In fact, the Korea Advanced Institute of Science and Technology. And what they've done is create a robot or a pilot robot or a PIBOT, they call it, that really has kind of humanoid types of features. So it's got a head with cameras that act as eyes. It's got arms and legs and a body. And the idea is that this robot could, quote, sit in the cockpit of an airplane that normally would be manned, and the robot would operate the controls. So this is a different idea than, as David says, taking an existing aircraft, a manned aircraft, and putting in a lot of electronics and servos and things that could control it remotely or autonomously. And instead of designing a clean sheet of paper, an unmanned aircraft, this is a way to get aircraft, large aircraft, up there unmanned more quickly. At least that's the idea.
And boy, are the airlines chafing at the bit at this. Think about their cost savings on over man. You know, you don't have to pay for health care. You don't have to, you know,
no union.
Yeah, well, you never know. Artificial intelligence, they might form a union eventually. Then, of course, you wonder, do the three laws of robotics and my beloved Isaac Asimov, how are they going to work when it comes to flying an airplane?
Something to think about. Something to consider.
So we'll leave Pybot to flying the airplane, and hopefully he can avoid balloons, which leads us to our video of the week. This was from do-it-yourself photography or DIYphotography.net. This is why drones and balloons don't like to play together. So you're videotaping your party and you decide to release a bunch of balloons, which I thought that was not environmentally safe anymore.
It's always kind of fun to, you know, have a party. And in this case, there were a number of these white helium balloons that they released. You've got a DJI Phantom up above sort of filming the release of the balloons. And it's pretty, it's kind of a nice little video. But then, I don't know, I guess the wind shifted, David.
Winds have changed about to blow. And unfortunately, one of the balloons and its little string got caught up in the poor little Phantom's rotor. And suddenly you have a quadcopter tumbling to the ground.
Yeah, Phantom taken out by helium balloon.
Well, we've seen Phantoms being taken out by animals and other things, so why not a helium balloon?
Sure. I'm sure that there are many other videos to come in the future with drones being disabled by a variety of different objects or animals and so forth.
So, talk about feedback, and this one's a little long and in-depth, but I think it's really important. This was from Steve. Hello, guys. After listening to your show 159, and that was the one with our friend Max Trescott, I had a couple of questions that came to mind and thought perhaps others might be asking the same questions, so here they are. So what I did was I took the questions and I sent them to our favorite pilots, Max Trescott and Rob Mark. And Mr. Trescott took a chance at answering these. So I'll read the questions and the other Max will answer in honor of Mr. Trescott. So the first question was from Steve was, why did the FAA conclude that a full-size aircraft flight review is needed to fly UAVs? Perhaps as part of an easy route to a UAV license as a courtesy to an already certified pilot?
Well, Max Trescott replied that flight reviews were instituted years ago when the FAA realized that fully 50% of the pilots would not be able to pass their check ride again 2 years later. So he's guessing that they are requiring it to assure that pilots stay abreast of the latest FARs, which will get reviewed with them during the 1 hour of ground required for a flight review.
So, interesting. Question two was, with the PPL, but not current, I need to have a flight review. I do not meet the requirements for the online test for the UAV license. If I were to get current, then obtain a UAV license based on my PPL and current status, and then let my flight review lapse, can I still legally fly a UAV?
And we think the answer to that is no, that a licensed pilot with a UAV certificate loses currency to fly a UAV after 2 years if they don't have another flight review.
Question three was, I believe there's a requirement for non-PPL UAV operators, pilots, to have a flight review. If I were to get the UAV license based on my PPL and a current flight review and then lapse the flight review, could I use the UAV flight review process to maintain my UAV currency, or am I locked into maintaining my PPL flight review?
Well, we think that the knowledge test has to be taken, again, every 2 years. And so that would be the requirement, that knowledge test every 2 years. But I think that's something maybe we should follow up on, David, and just kind of confirm that that's the case.
Agreed. We can reach out to some FAA people and see what's going on. And this seems to be an unusual requirement where remaining legal for one type of aircraft requires the maintaining currency in a different type of aircraft. Are there any other situations that have a similar requirement?
And Max Trescott replied that he couldn't think of one. Maybe eventually, he says, they'll have a UAV CFI rating, Certified Flight Instructor rating. And then you can go to the park and fly with your CFI for an hour, and do that every 2 years to remain current. But we'll see if that comes about.
So thanks, Steve, for those questions. And I guess we have a little more research to do, but they were interesting topics. Our next one was from Patrick. Patrick writes, I saw this video for the first time earlier today at a movie theater of all places while waiting for the movie to start, and I love the look of the airplane. I have no idea whether the idea is practical or not, but I used to question electric cars, and now I'm driving one. And this was Facebook tests internet beaming plane, which we were talking about the Aquila earlier, and this was from NPR.org. And basically, it shows the first flight of the Aquila earlier this year.
Yeah, and we'll have a link to this in the show notes as well. It's one of those long, thin-winged kind of aircraft. Yeah, a lot of lift, designed to kind of float up there at a high altitude. And, of course, we've seen the Solar Impulse fly around the globe and demonstrate that this kind of thing is possible, solar power. That, of course, is a manned aircraft. This one would be unmanned. But as we said before, I think Facebook is making a lot of progress. I think they have a lot of motivation to make this work. So we'll be seeing more of this.
The next video actually was from Steve, and my co-host really, really liked this video. It's not often I hear the words, it was too short, come out of his mouth.
Yeah, but I know. When's the last time you saw a video and said, gee, I wish that was a lot longer? This is one of those.
And what is it, Max?
So in Australia, kind of somewhere in the middle of Australia, there is this big rock, Uluru, which is also called Ayers Rock by many. It's sort of the classic image you see when you're looking at material about Australia.
And the outback.
The outback. And so this is some spectacular footage from that. They say that this is the first drone that was given permission, official permission, to operate inside this national park. I think the implication is probably some other people have, you know, without permission, maybe done that. But this thing is huge. It's old. You get a perspective that you don't get just looking at photographs taken from the ground. This is one of those kinds of videos that really could only be produced by a drone. So thanks for sending that in. It's gorgeous. I love this video. But it is kind of short.
Oh, well, there's probably more of where this came from.
Mm. So we'll have links to all of those videos in the show notes. We invite you to take a look at those. But with that, David, unless you've got anything else that you can think that we need to cover this episode, I think that'll bring it to a close. This has been episode 161 of the UAV Digest. You can find us, as always, at theuavdigest.com. Show notes are at theuavdigest.com/161. We'll have links to all the news stories, the videos, and so forth. Invite you to take a look there.
And, of course, you can find us on social media, on Twitter, at UAV Digest, and Facebook, /UAV Digest. We'd love you to join our Slack listener team, which you can do by either just emailing us a request at feedback@theuavdigest.com, or you can learn a little bit more about it at theuavdigest.com/team. We'd love for you to provide some feedback to us, or like we've got the videos of the week, as well as Steve's great questions about PPLs and licenses. Also, you can leave us some feedback at iTunes, Stitcher.com, or Google Play. You can always purchase some swag at our Cafe Press store, or you can become a patron of the show at patreon.com. And of course, with that, we'll wrap this up. We will see you next week. This has been David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thank you for listening.